Welcome to the Spaghetti Launchers, the world building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Today's episode is for the uninitiated to become initiated because we'll be discussing initiation rituals.
Initiation rituals, you know them, you love them, you hate them. I don't
even
know
when they don't ever appear, like the fucking trials in Star Wars. They keep mentioning them and they just never. I'm like, what the fuck are these trials?
As we were like getting ready to record, I started remembering in The Hangover, whenever they do the blood pact for the wolf pack thing, yeah, where he just cuts over his hand and it's like
without telling him.
Yeah, just that movie was so good at the time it came out and not good anymore. But
it's still good.
There's still some good moments.
It's really
did Caesar
funny.
Live here?
Yeah, right. Is this beeper friendly?
But classic, you know, any blood pact is
blood
like,
packs it, are great,
is yeah, a ritual. Those like vibey, everyone's around some sort of object. Hooded figures, they're all, you know, like, oh, let's
the Gom Jabbar,
the what,
the Gom Jabbar test from Dune to become one of the with the paint, the hand, oh, in the, yeah, box, and fear is the mind killer and the needle, and
yeah, but that's a great ritual.
Yeah,
you know, Assassin's Creed has the,
oh yeah,
the very
they
cool
cut off the ring finger.
We cut off your finger and replace it with a hidden dagger, super, yeah, fucking metal.
Yeah. Pun intended.
If speaking of metal, if you watch the recent Fallout show, which you should because it's phenomenal, Ethan hasn't seen it, but you should see it, where they brand the Knights of the Brotherhoods of Steel with a hot gauntlet from the power armor, where they just smack on the back of their neck, which
I
is
like
pretty
that.
Cool. A brand is always like a pretty intense way to be initiated.
It is, especially when juxtaposed with what actually getting a brand actually means. Like, did you see the Beverly Hills Ninja Chris Farley movie from the 90s?
No, that's a deep cut.
Deep cut. In one of the openings, it's Chris Farley. He's called the Great White Ninja. He's raised by this
Christ.
Clan of ninjas. And his adopted brother is Robin Shao, who played Liu Kang in the 90s Mortal Kombat movie.
Okay.
And who basically has to follow him around for the rest of the movie, fixing all his mistakes because he's Chris Farley. He's completely inept. The,
yeah,
initiation ritual for them is they have to endure the pain of picking up a superheated metal like cauldron, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
And so it brands their ninja clan symbol into their forearms. And so at first, you know, Robin Chow goes to do it and he's very stoic and just holding it. And you see the brand happening and then he puts it down. And he's branding. Oh, you're, yeah, one of the ninjas now.
Yeah.
And then Chris Farley goes to do it and he picks it up and it just like barely touches his skin before he freaks out and knocks it over and like scatters all the hot coals everywhere and starts a fire. And then at the end, it just shows that he got the symbols tattooed on his arms.
That's an easier way to do it.
Yeah.
That's a shout.
Yeah. Deep cut. Rest in peace, Chris Farley. You know, we mentioned the Gom Jabbar, but like in comics, there are some really good ones. Like in order for the final test for someone under Bruce Wayne's care / child abuse to become Robin, the final test was you had to evade Batman for one whole night. And basically he would just be like, okay, child who I've just trained to be a crime fighter, you're free in the city. If I find you, you've lost.
Yeah.
And you're out. And
yeah,
so you have to like evade Batman for one whole night. And I like that idea of like, they did it a little bit in the Batman Begins with the League of Shadows is,
yeah,
you know, when he had to face, when he had to fight Liam Neeson as part of the ritual after they drugged him up.
Yeah.
It's like, I like the idea where it's like the final test is to beat your master.
Yeah.
I always like that. I think that's fun.
I like ones where the final test, and this is like, I'm thinking about the Bourne movies where the test, because I've been listening to Behind the Screenplay, which is a great podcast, and they're doing the Bourne movies.
I didn't know about
and
that.
And
I am subscribing to that right now.
It's a great podcast. Also have a good YouTube channel. But they stopped doing YouTube because they just started doing the podcast. But they were talking about the scene wherever he like does the final initiation to join, where he has to kill.
Oh, right. That's a great one.
Kill a guy who's, gets his hood removed, and then there's just another guy across from him who's also hooded, and he has to kill this guy. And he doesn't really know what he did other than I think he was just told like he's an enemy of the state or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact, but
the point was it doesn't matter who,
yeah,
he was. It was that we told you to do it. You need to do it.
Yeah.
Without
like
thinking.
You are serving your country, quote unquote.
Right.
Kill this guy. And that, like, the hardening of the assassin by just making them do a thing that they probably don't want to do.
Yeah.
Is always pretty intense.
I love that. I think that's great and gives us a pretty good setup.
For your three words?
Yeah, because my three words actually are deliberate Bourne identity.
Okay, well, let's keep the Bourne going.
Thanks for that. What about you? But I got to know, what's your menu, Kyle?
Vignettes.
Is that with or without a question mark?
Without.
Okay. So confirmed vignettes.
Yes, vignettes.
Nice. I like it.
Let's do Bourne.
Yeah, Bourne comes easy. So Bourne Identity, fantastic movie. There's actually a podcast that I love called The Rewatchables, where they basically go through movies they like and talk about what makes them rewatchable and why they like them so much. And they do, like, what's the best line, who won the movie, that kind of thing. It's good. And they did one on the Bourne Identity and made the point in it, which I think is true, that the Bourne Identity had a much bigger impact on action movies than most people actually give it credit for.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was absolutely a game changer for all action movies
completely,
for a while.
For a very long time.
Until, like, Marvel.
The whole point about the Bourne Identity, though, is that he has no memory. He has amnesia, right? And throughout the movie is basically just discovering that he knows how to do all these things. You know, when the cops poke him with the baton, and then he freaks out and beats them up when he's trying to sleep in the park, and you're like, what the fuck just happened? Or he walks into a room, he's like, why do I immediately know where all the exits are and know that if there were to be a gun behind the counter, it would be under the cash, right? Why do I know all of these things? If it were deliberate, though, it would be a great test to see how well the training has sunk in. And so the initiation ritual is for a group of assassins, ninjas, warriors, knightly orders, whatever. I don't care. They wipe your memory completely. They give you deliberate amnesia.
Permanently or just for, like, a testing period?
Just for a testing period.
Okay, so they give you amnesia as, like, a one-week time.
Basically until they decide if you've passed or failed.
Okay. If you failed, do you get your memory back?
Yeah, because then you got to go back to training.
Cool.
Because the whole point...
If you pass, do you get your memory back?
Yeah.
Okay, so you get your memory back.
You get your memory back regardless.
Cool.
But the test, the initiation occurs during the period where you don't have your memory, because you are given a task to complete. It's like you wake up with just, like, normal clothes on your back and you know, a piece of paper saying, like, go to this place. So all you know is you have this one mission. You've got to go to this place. And then throughout the whole adventure, it's people coming after you, trying to test you to see, like, oh, did he notice that we left a secret weapon for him on the top shelf of this, you know, house that was nearby where he woke up, because his training should have told him to look there, because we always taught him to check the corners.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You get so specific on, like, what are you trained
exactly
for? It gets you okay.
Like, if ninjas attack you, like, can you defend yourself? Do you wake up? Are your senses trained enough that you notice the ninjas before they even attack you?
Yeah.
Let alone, can you fight them off? Right? It's all sort of this, did this training actually work? Did this all sink in? Because your conscious memory is not guiding it. It's all muscle memory.
Yeah. I think it's really cool. And it wasn't what I thought you were going to do with the Forceborn Identity.
What did you think I was going to do?
I thought it was just that you had to have your memory wiped and set forth as, like, the initiation. Not that was just to test that the training worked.
Oh, I see.
I think that's what works really well here, is that this is simply a mechanism to make sure that you have, like, your muscle memory, intrinsically, you now get it.
Yep.
And all these skills are embedded in you enough that they won't just disappear, that you know them even when we've gotten rid of your otherwise functional memories.
Yeah.
That's super cool. Then thinking about it mechanically, so it creates so much tension and suspense, because, so say you start a story where, you know, it's like page one is somebody acknowledging, I'm about to lose my memory, and let's hope I pass this test. And then it's, you just kind of wake up and you have to start going and uncovering as you're reading, like, this guy just no longer has his memory, but going through what clearly is like some perilous scenarios.
Right. Something is happening.
Something is happening. And it's the shit's just like because his paranoia has got to be off. Because I assume when they do this, that your paranoia kind of goes up because you know, your instincts are being set on fire that
something is
that there are threats, right, and that there are things you need to be taking care of.
Right. That's a great point. That's the first test, is are you paranoid or not? Yeah. Are you anxious? If you're calm, like, you can be calm, but if you're not paranoid,
yeah, like you should be cautious. You should be aware, not paranoid. You should be aware.
Right.
You should be hyper aware and like clocked in that, like, what's happening around you and what you need to be solving. Right. And then say the tone of the story can move into paranoia.
Right.
And to be like, let's make the reader feel anxiety. Let's make the reader feel paranoid because this guy's got shit coming at him and he knows what to do, probably.
But doesn't know that he knows what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And doesn't know what the problem's going to be. I think that can be really fun.
Yeah.
And then it's like when those little things happen, what are you going to do?
And the fun of this, and this is something that came up literally just as you were talking about this, it occurs to me that the reason, not only is this the reason why you might need to know if the training worked and stuck in so well, like if it really is muscle memory, is because this is a great way to have a network of sleeper cell assassins who have had their memory wiped.
Yeah.
They don't know that they're assassins. It's Winter Soldier, exactly. And it's like, but it's a great way of like, this is how you replicate it and do it at scale.
Yeah.
Is to make sure that it's tested, and that so that when they get, you know, you might be given a mission, but if they get captured or kidnapped, it's like, I'm Bob Smith. I'm Jane Smith. I literally, because that's all you know.
Yeah, you can't torture out an answer because they don't know. They don't have it.
Yep.
And they can't even, they're not lying.
No.
They don't have to lie. They don't know.
They literally have no idea.
But if you try to fight them, they will kick your ass and not even know that they know how to do it.
Correct.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that could create a... I think I've seen something that feels like that. There's something.
Yeah, it's. It's tickling something in the back of my brain.
But who knows?
It's.
Everything's derivative, guys.
Yep.
At some point.
I think it's just, it's a cool, like, you could even remove the mind wiped assassins part of it and still have it be like, did the training work? Did they kick it? And just have it be like, yeah, the muscle memory worked. They're there. They're deadly.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Boom. That might be it.
It's it. It's, I don't know. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, I don't. I think with initiation rituals, it's like there's not much more you can do other than figure out what the ritual is and figure out what it's for. And pretty clear for this one, it's for some sort of combat-based organization.
It could also be. Imagine it's for magic users, right? And they have to figure out, oh, I'm actually pyrokinetic, and yeah, I can keep myself warm in this frigid environment, or I can create water in this desert, right?
Yeah.
Like, it depends.
I don't think you need to wipe their memory to do that, though. I think it really only works, I guess, is my point, if it's assassinating or
fighting based. I think it's most effective, but I don't think it's restrictively so.
No, but...
But I agree that it is way more effective
if it's a fighting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Might be at the end of that.
That's it. It's pretty simple, pretty clean. I think it's just cool.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Vignettes. Press play.
Play. So if you're joining an organization, joining like a band of mercenaries, a band of a band of mercenaries of some kind, of
the 40 thieves.
All right, you're joining the 40 thieves, and when you have proven yourself enough to be initiated, then your initiation is really about understanding everybody else in the organization, so that you understand the history of it and you understand your place in it, and you have a lot more empathy for those around you, so that you are loyal. And to do that through, you do it through some sort of magic, You think of Harry Potter with the hairs and whatever, where you can like, yeah, we can see people's memories,
like a telepath or something,
but where you fully get to like relive vignettes of the lives of the people around you, where the leader can like play a vignette of their first day when they were in here, or this guy can like, you know, play for you a memory of like a job that they did that went wrong, and this person can play a vignette of their childhood, and this, and they can just play these different vignettes and like share with you memories so that you understand them, and then you like live through that memory in full as them, and so you actually like deeply understand them, and you get a sense of the way that they think and the way that they emotionally react to things. You kind of get that, you build that bond and that connection,
yeah,
where they're all incredibly tight and they have like a familial bond that is pretty hard to shake, and thus keeps the organization super tight and secure.
Yeah,
because who's
gonna... like Ender's Game, the more I understand my enemy, the more I love them, right? Like, but if you forge that deep of an understanding between guildmates,
yeah, then like you're pretty set.
I could also see this being very effective in the field as well, because if you've been in that person's body, right, like you've lived through some experience of theirs, you are intimately aware of not just how they would emotionally react to something, but how they'd physically react to something.
Yeah.
So that if, you know, for example, you would know exactly, having lived in my body, even for a short amount of time, like I got a bad back, like you would know how to send what it looks like when my back is starting to go out.
Yeah.
And you would be able to step in and cover for me, just in the same way that I could do the same for you. Or like, you know, oh, he's slower on his left side than on his right, so yeah, I got to protect his left side and make sure that I stand there, right? Like you would, it would be seamless pack tactics, basically.
Okay.
Where you're all sort of covering each other's weaknesses.
Let's take this idea a step further. Let's bring it back and then take it a step further.
Okay.
Because I like where you're going at. You commit this initiation and you join what like essentially like a hive mind doppelganger.
Yeah.
That they each can fully mimic each other, transform into each other as like a doppelganger, where I can actively like
visually.
Like I can actually turn myself into looking like Ethan. And then I know Ethan because of this hive mindy shared memories. I also understand Ethan. I understand him fully, that I can pretend to be him, or potentially I am now like just a part of a host of a hive mind and my body is just available for that. But like, we all have some sort of independence, you know, like I don't know how to play around with
no,
it.
No, I do.
Okay.
The initiation, the test, is, can you maintain your independence?
Ooh.
You are forcibly inserted into the hive mind.
Okay.
If you don't maintain your independence, if you can't retain your individuality,
yeah,
you get lost in the hive mind and you become, you know, maybe a shifter or a clone or a chameleon or something. And it's, you basically go insane because you don't know who you are.
Yeah.
Or you might suddenly start thinking, oh shit, I am Kyle now. Like Ethan is gone. I am fully Kyle now because I just latched on in the hive mind somehow. Mm-hmm. But if you can maintain your individuality, that's passing the test.
Okay.
And then you have to constantly sort of be monitored as you go on and live in this group, because if you start adopting too many mannerisms of another person, or if you start talking like another person, like there's constantly this...
There's like a vigilance and that's why their numbers are low.
Yep.
That's why there's 40 thieves. And now there's 41, but there'll probably be 40 again pretty soon, because eventually these people die. They maintain a rather static number because there isn't enough.
There's a threshold.
Well, I don't think there's a threshold. It's just like, it's so difficult to get new people to, one, want to join, to be capable of joining. Because I'm imagining when you were talking about that, like you become a clone or a
chameleon
or whatever, like you just become...
Think up a cool name for it.
I just think you just become a husk.
You could do that too.
Brain fries and you become a vegetable.
Yeah, it's like overloaded.
And you just used in some other way, like thinking of like the Mass Effect when they have the husks in Mass Effect 2, that I don't even, like, their purpose is a bit nebulous, but you become an obvious failure at this test, and everybody in the 40 Thieves sees the people who have failed, sees their husks, because they now like act as essentially like servants, because they can't do anything, like they're functionally incapable of doing much at all. I don't know. Or
maybe they just become guards, or they go into the army or something. It actually ties in a little bit to what I was talking about. If the muscle memory is still there,
with the
deliberate born identity,
you could be
like an automated security response kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, like, you can play around with what happens to the people who fail. I think there's an interesting thing in there, but the idea that people do fail at a pretty high rate. People who take this test, which is a low number of people take it, but a high number of people fail.
Yeah.
Because it's really
hard.
That's
a good point.
Because you can't actually fully know whether or not you can handle that hive mind feedback until you do it, because it's not comparable to anything else.
No.
So how do you prepare other than really just actually knowing who you are as a person? It's like, go to therapy.
Right.
I don't know. Like,
or be stubborn as fuck.
Yeah. So stubborn people, but stubborn people also might not play well with the hive mind.
They might not.
Because the point of the hive mind is also you have to be capable and willing and interested in adapting and becoming other individuals as a part of this. And you're cultivating also
because
so much empathy amongst each other.
The hive mind.
Yeah.
It has to flow through you. Yeah.
Like, you have to let it flow through you like a
water
crow
over rocks.
I was gonna say like a crow on an electric line.
Oh yeah.
They're just all there. It's just flowing through them all. They're all part of it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't fight it,
mm-hmm.
but they all have their own individuality,
mm-hmm.
but they do fly as a herd or as a flock. Nonetheless.
Murder.
Yeah. They're a murder.
It's a murder group.
Yeah. So yeah, I think
that's very cool.
Yeah. And what they do with this, now that we've made it more of a hive mindy thing, I think it does make it more interesting on what their role can be. Because now I think their role becomes more elevated. They shouldn't be 40 Thieves. They should be running the fucking world.
I think they could be running the fucking world.
And like they're serving as kings and queens and shit, but as in...
Oh, Shadow Cabal.
But for instance, they are the advisors, you know, like we've referenced them many times, I think. In
McKinsey?
No, but like in The Witcher, where they have the sorceresses serve on each of the king's councils, which is such a cool, it's my favorite thing of the world building that he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then doing that, where these people are serving as random advisors to various important people, but then they can hive mind and they can transform into each other and kind of just feed that information back. And, you know, I don't know how the hive mind or how the transformative nature necessarily would benefit in that case, but the hive minding of it all to make sure, oh, this king's talking about going to war, and then you can just hive mind that over to other people who are dealing with the king he wants to go to war with, and you can advise a course of action that would prevent war without that guy even knowing it. You know,
it's the ultimate expression of insider trading, really.
Yeah. Inside trading, but then how do they?
If you want to orchestrate a war between two great world powers, but have one be the victor, then all you need is one advisor in each place
to give
to just be giving back information on the back end.
Yeah,
definitely not at all similar to what the New England Patriots did.
Yeah,
not at all.
Or that might be too ambitious. Let's take it away from that, because it's like that becomes. I want to figure out, how do you make use of hive mind and doppelganger-y stuff?
Beyond assassins? Because I think they'd
beyond
be great fucking assassins.
Yeah, but like assassins, like everything makes a good assassin. Let's make them not an assassin, because now we're just building a faction. We have a cool initiation for a unique flavor. What do? Also, we don't have to explore it.
I agree. They would be great assassins, that goes without saying. I don't want them to be assassins. I want them to be an army. Because what I want is for them to, I want their fighting abilities in open combat, not sneaky assassin guerrilla warfare, to be so heightened by the fact that they are in each other's heads and know exactly where they're going, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, that it's basically a sci-fi phalanx.
Yeah.
Where like the phalanx that the Spartans used protected from all outside forces because you protected each other.
Yeah.
This is the same concept. It's just mentally. So even if there only are 40 of you,
yeah,
that connection makes you almost like the Sadokar in Dune. You're still a human, but you are so elevated by this connection and so highly trained that you can take down entire military forces much more easily. I like that idea because it emphasizes the importance of the connection.
Yeah. Well, and then the
coordination
and the doppelganger stuff where you could throw people off by all of a sudden transforming into the biggest guy in the troop and then transforming into the smallest person in the troop.
Yeah.
And you're throwing people off where they're like going to swing and then all of a sudden you made yourself like super you turn into like a super skinny person. In the, like, you know, there's like one guy in the group who's like rail thin as like he's the dodge guy. You turn into him to dodge a hit, and then you turn into the big fat dude to like run into a bunch of people and knock him over.
Right.
You know, you could just kind of play around with form too, because I want to figure out how you could play, because I think at its core, I think the best way to use it is still going to be as thieves.
Sure.
Because
I agree.
That's where you get to play the social element as well of transforming into different people to like do a bit like a lot of duping and trickery because the hive mind, like doing heists, having a hive mind makes it very easy to do. Having the ability to transform into one of 40 people makes that pretty easy to do. It makes crime very easy. I think fighting very easy. Assassination very easy.
They're not soldiers, they're squires. They are the support.
Okay.
So they are coordinated, not in their active warfare, but in sending resources and healing and support between all of the different points of contact between each of them.
Okay.
So they are connected with each other. It's not about suddenly shifting into the sneaky, stabby fighter and then turning into the big bruiser and punching your way through.
Uh-huh.
It's about knowing, hey, I'm with the big bruiser right now, and they are taking hits, and they need additional armor. And so you having that hive mind information, send it out, and then more arms start coming to you.
What? Like, you start growing additional arms?
No. Like, arms, like armor, weapons.
Yeah,
that
okay.
Type of thing.
We're playing enough in speculative where I was like, what? Yeah. Is he you just General Grievous all of a sudden?
I think it
could work well as you're the support staff of an army.
Mm-hmm.
You're backing up all the generals and commanders or whatever, and that you can deploy rapidly. You can help deploy. You are the generals.
Yeah.
So
you're not fighting.
So you're not squires, and you are the logistics network for a country.
Yeah.
Take away the
you're
army.
You're the supply chain.
You're the supply chain for everything. Let's remove the army thing. One guy is in charge of
water.
One guy's in charge of sewage. One guy's in charge of all the farms. One guy's in charge of the military. One guy's in charge of this, that. And you have a hive mind of every, like when I talked about earlier, of like you have the advisors in all the high positions. It's like, no. It's just each of these people is the logistics or the operational core of all of the various nodes of this country.
It's a great way to test all of those economic theories that we learned in grad school, because you're that much closer to perfect information.
Yeah, if it's perfect information, and it's instant perfect information,
right.
And it's no deceit is involved because they have this familial level of bond and empathy for each other that they are making sure that it's all flowing perfectly. And in that case, you might remove the doppelganger. No, you don't. Because I think you...
I think it maybe it's a side effect.
Because I think it then becomes, I am just one of...
I'm just a node.
I'm one of the 40.
Yeah.
And we, the 40, are what's important, not we as individuals. So if you work for me as the head of water, I am one of the 40. I will be numbered or whatever. I'll have a name, but like I'm number 38 of 40.
Yeah.
No, they don't want to number that because number one will get cocky. But like I am Kyle of the 40, and thus I'm known. But I can immediately just become anybody else of the 40, and everyone in the 40 knows of me as Kyle. But I'm also just to the outside world, I'm just one of the 40. I don't know. Like I feel like it's creating that.
I think
kind
that's interesting. I like the point is the network.
Yeah.
What we've come to is that the point is the network, and that's why the initiation ritual of not rejecting the network, but also but not losing yourself to the network is so critical.
And
like you need to maintain your individuality.
Yes. And that hive mindy sense of
belonging, connection. The possibilities are endless.
Surely. Well, I love there's
that.
40 of them.
I think that's a great idea.
All right, so turn the microwave on.
Heat up some leftovers.
What is in the microwave, Ethan?
Handstand contest.
Cool.
The reason being, because these are soldiers that fight in a sci-fi world, and they need to make sure that they can handle constantly changing, basically, feelings of gravity. And so whoever can stand on their head and withstand the amount of pressure for so long of all the blood rushing to their head is going to have the most likely success at this is like a basic training thing where like you pass basic training and you still have other advanced training to go on to, but it's can you physically just withstand this all this blood rushing to your head for that long.
Yeah, cool.
What you got?
I have a open interpretation ritual where you are like you wake up in a room, like a huge room, and there's like a smattering of hooded figures who are members of the organization, just not saying anything, not doing anything, not looking at you. You can't really see them. They're just shapes in a room.
Yeah.
No one has given you any instruction. You don't know what to do. And it's just, how do you react? And they interpret your behavior to help determine if you are initiated or not. But you might be initiated no matter what, unless you do something completely bonkers. But it's just...
And just start stabbing people.
It's like a sense of how confident are you in yourself and what this organization does. And but they don't have a test. There's not like a thing they're expecting of you to do. It's like there's an adage for DMs in D&D is like, you set the puzzle, like you set the problem. You don't have the solution. That's their problem.
Right.
Well, if your players propose a solution, you decide if it's good enough or not. And just use that in this case of the organization has set the problem. The initiate will determine the solution and they'll see if it's good enough.
I like it. It's sort of like a Japanese koan, like in Zen Buddhism, in order to evoke enlightenment, a Zen master will say something or do an action that's meant to sort of be a little bit out of touch with reality or out of the question, almost a little bit absurd, to evoke enlightenment and understanding in the apprentice.
Oh, cool.
So sort of like that. And I like the idea of it being dependent on interpretation, because maybe it's not an initiation. It's not a test that you need to pass. We've been using this, you know, sort of as like a test you need to pass. Maybe it's an initiation ritual, sort of like a sorting hat, where based on how you respond, they know which group to put you in.
If
you get nervous and scared and anxious, then you might be very good at
this thing versus
being
that thing.
On being in security or on watch duty.
Yeah. Well, I don't really want the guys really anxious on security, and he might just pull the trigger early.
No, but you want someone saying something moved over there. Go check it out.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's a good point. All right. What stuck for you?
The hive mind, the maintaining your individuality.
Yeah.
And the hive mind is very cool.
Yeah, that was a good note.
I think that's really, it's really fun. And
I like that we got to the hive mind. I didn't expect that was
where, I didn't where either, we, but yeah. it's very cool and a great test.
Yeah.
I also like it's the original idea of the testing the muscle memory. I think it's a great, like you said, it's a great way to tell a story. It's a great first person perspective. Yeah. It's also a great character point if for any RPG, you know, if you're, again, we always default to D&D, but, oh, how did you know how to do extra attack or action surge? You're a fighter. How did you know how to do that? I don't know. I just did it. Why are you with this traveling group? I don't know who I'm trying to find my memory, but I keep and that's a great narrative for leveling up is
you discover stuff about yourself.
Yeah. Oh damn. I didn't know I could attack 3 times. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's cool. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think,
what about you?
Both of those things stuck for me. I think it's the same stuff, which is the test being a, you know, like the amnesia being the test, just to be like, oh, does it work?
Yeah. Did it work?
Yeah. And I do like the tension of that first, those first couple moments of I'm about to wipe my memory. Fuck, it's gone. Okay. Yeah. And then wake up, be like, oh shit. And then like the anxiety and the instincts kicking in. I think that's really cool. And then, yeah, I really love getting to the hive mind.
Yeah.
I think that was a good call.
It's really fun because
I think it was a good natural progression from an idea that was mostly about like cultivating empathy and understanding and like knowing your place within an organization and like knowing all your comrades really well, but not, I didn't think about the fact that like you could just take that a step further. If you're truly world building and you want to make it a really unique organization, it's one that you do that to the degree that you join a hive mind voluntarily that they've created.
Sports. Why didn't we think of sports, man?
What?
They'd be a great, that, I mean, imagine that being a football team. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, they'd be very good at it.
Right.
Okay.
But to your point.
Yeah, that's my point. My point's done. I don't remember. But anyway, so that's what stuck for us.
Let us know what stuck for you.
Thanks for listening.
Email's in the show notes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.